Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, we're doing the recap. Miami Heat beat the Brooklyn Nets 121-100 in their preseason game. This is Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, joined as always by David Ramil. Goran Dragic sets the tone, right? That's what we've been kind of waiting for him to do. He's got the reins, and he took them.
Yeah, I mean, we expected him to take over the team. I thought, he was pretty impressive in the minutes that he played. I think, we had speculated that, you know, as Wayne Wade controlled a lot of the pace last season and that, you know, Goran was forced to kind of compliment him and play off him a little bit. But now that the ball is mostly in his hands, he gets to set the tone, and he really did so at a high level. Finished off with 17 points, 11 assists, just 2 turnovers in 29 minutes of play. So a real solid overall night for him. But the way he dished out those assists, the way he was controlling the flow of the game, I think was what really stood out.
Yeah, it was exactly, I think, what we were hoping to see. Nobody, I don't think, expects Goran Dragic to go out and be this guy that's going to score 25 points a game, 10 assists. Like, that's just not who he is. He's not necessarily a flashy player, even though he can make a flashy play every once in a while, but he's not Russell Westbrook, you know? Right. So he's not going to dominate or take over the game in that sort of way, and he's not going to do it in a Dwayne Wade way. He's not going to do it in a Russell Westbrook or a LeBron way, but he's going to... He made his presence felt tonight, and he was able to set the tone. I mean, the team hit, what, I think it was 11 three-pointers in the game when it mattered, 12 three-pointers. I think they got one towards the end there.
Yeah,
that's a lot of, like, that's more three-pointers than I think Dwayne Wade made all last season. I could be wrong, but I'm just going to estimate.
He's a three-point shooter now in Chicago, so that's a whole different story.
Shooting off the dribble over there. We don't need to talk about that. I think this is exactly what we wanted to see from Dragic. I mean, a modest, relatively modest stat line, 17 points, 11 assists. But, I mean, again, he had the driving kick, a lot of spread pick and roll earlier with Hassan Whiteside, who we'll talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what we want from this guy, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was picking apart the defense pretty well. And look, and you do have to take it with the rather large grain of salt that, one, it's preseason, and two, it's the Brooklyn Nets, who aren't expected to win a whole heck of a lot of
games.
They're
probably going to lose fewer games than they're going to lose more games than the 76ers.
Yeah, I've predicted them to be the worst team in the Eastern Conference, although a lot of Nets fans probably don't agree, but that's a whole other story.
There's Locked On Nets for them. They can get out of here.
Yeah. I mean, there's a talent deficiency there. They were minus Brook Lopez, who's arguably their best player, although I'm sure there's a loyal contingency who thinks Jeremy Lin is the best player on the planet. Of course, needless to say, the best player on the Nets team. But still, I think, you know, he was able to really see the weaknesses in defense. And you know, if you saw the game, you noticed him really using the spin move much more creatively than we saw during a lot of moments last year. Again, with the ball in his hands, he pushed it. He had players to go, you know, at a high speed with him. He had, you know, Justice Winslow, Hassan Whiteside trailing with him, really helping to push the pace. Derek Williams really was really willing to get out on the fast break as well. So he really controlled how that, you know, first team offense moved. And then once he found if there was a hole in the defense, you know, let's say a big man who was trying to cover him, he just spun right past him, as he did on a number of occasions, finished at a high percentile at the rim, you know, all the things that we expect from Goran Dragic.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the spin move. He showed a lot of body control, and that's something we knew he had, right? That's
absolutely
what was scouted about him, even coming to Miami. But he was able to show it off more. You know, the whole idea that he's going to have the ball in his hands more, we saw that on display tonight probably more than any other preseason game, I thought. And coincidentally, it was his best preseason game. I think that he showed a lot of patience in transition. I think that we have this idea about Goran Dragic, that he wants to just take the ball and then just get down and run. But there was this one play, particularly in the end of the, I think it was the third quarter, maybe the beginning of the fourth quarter, where Goran Dragic had the ball in transition, and he just, I think Winslow was running with him, but Winslow was covered, and so was he. It was like a 2-on-3 or 2-on-4 The Knicks were defending it well. And he slowed it down. He had his head on a swivel. He was still dribbling. And he positioned himself just right to where Luke Babbitt came back behind him. And he got Babbitt the ball quickly at the top of the arc, and Babbitt just drained a three like nothing, like just smooth like butter. And it was one of the more impressive plays for me in regards to Goran Dragic's game tonight. I really liked that play.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was able to change the pace as well, not just push it at a higher tempo, but he slowed down, especially with his dribble. You know, just a quick change of dribble speed, and all of a sudden he was able to utilize that to get past arguably a pretty weak defender in Jeremy Lin. But he also hit two of three three-pointers. So, I mean, it was just a matter, you know, maybe at times he was reduced to a pop-and shooter from the perimeter. But, you know, this season, we'll see him.
Exactly. That's exactly what we want, right? When some of these secondary and tertiary ball handlers get the ball, if he can knock down those threes, it's going to be huge. Because one of the threes you're talking about came on a skip pass from Justice Winslow in the first quarter. And that's exactly what we've been talking about. Also had a nice moment on the sideline with his arm around Hassan Whiteside. Do you see that?
Yes, I did. That was pretty encouraging. I mean, you want that kind of budding chemistry. I know it's a feel-good moment. Maybe it doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot, but there was even another time there where he was talking with Whiteside and Justice Winslow, and they were kind of conversing there, and a big goofy smile on all their faces. It's good to see that kind of camaraderie. You might not expect a whole heck of a lot of success, you know, from this team, because there are going to be problems moving forward, but that is really encouraging and a good thing to see.
You know, a game like this, again, it was the Nets, but they beat them by 21 points. And more importantly, because it's the preseason, the wins and losses don't matter. We did see some really good development, a really good ball flow that Dragic set the tempo for, and giving reasons for Heat fans to really watch the Heat. And if you want to watch the Heat in person, well, you're going to need tickets to do that, or else they won't let you in the building. That's a fun fact. We're only here for information. To get the best tickets, go to SeatGeek. I mean, it's the smartest way to buy and sell tickets. It's really the only option that you have. I mean, it's not the only option, but it's like the only option of all the best options. It's the one that you should do. SeatGeek makes buying and selling tickets online easier. It's the smartest way to do it. It's like kayak.com, but for tickets. Basically, it aggregates all the main ticket sites and just finds the best deals for you. So it takes all the work out of it. I mean, the last thing I want to do is sit online for hours and just try to figure out where I'm going to buy tickets from and how to get a good deal. And I got like 17 different tabs open, and I'm looking for promo codes and some shady websites online. I don't want to do that. SeatGeek just does all of the work for you. So you just go on a SeatGeek, punch in the search bar what you want to go see, probably a Heat game, and it gives you all the best deals right there in front of you. It has big green dots that mark good deals, little red dots that mark not so great deals. Best of all, listeners to Locked On Heat get a special promo code for $20 off, or a $20 rebate after you make your first SeatGeek purchase. That promo code is LOHEAT, LOHEAT. Just go to the settings tab, enter the promo code LOHEAT, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So just download the app on your phone, go to the website online, and it's all there for you. It's the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, watching the game, you know, they were talking about the upcoming events at the American Airlines Arena. And all I could think of was, you know, downloading that free SeatGeek app and using it to buy tickets. They were advertising Barbra Streisand and other concerts that are coming to the American Airlines Arena.
Mariah Carey?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, super convenient. So if you want to get that $20 rebate, remember, download the SeatGeek app and use LOHEAT to get your first rebate on your first SeatGeek ticket purchase.
All right, so we're going to introduce a new segment that I'm really excited about. It's the Power Forward Belt. We don't know what the hell's going on with the power forward situation. We don't
know. Oh, I think we know exactly what's going on with the power forward position. That's the problem.
That's true. We don't know who the best one is, and I don't think the Heat do, and I don't think the power forwards know, the players know either. It's going to be a situation where it's going to be a little inconsistent on a game-to-game basis, certainly on a week-to-week basis. So what we're going to do in these recaps, at least for the preseason, we'll see how far we get into this maybe for the regular season, but for the preseason when we're trying to decide, okay, who's going to be the starting power forward, we're going to give out the belt after each one of these games, every time we do one of these recap podcasts. So, first of all, Derek Williams, we got to mention, he got his first start at power forward. Before that, it was Luke Babbitt and James Johnson in the first two games. So in this third preseason game, it was Derek Williams. And I thought he played really well. I mean, his stat line was, and I'll bring it up, first of all, he's a plus 37, the box plus minus, which I know doesn't mean like advanced stats people will be like, well, that doesn't matter. It doesn't tell you how good of a player he is. Well, it tells you exactly his impact on the floor for that game. It tells a story. right? And he was the team was literally 37 points better when Derek Williams was on the floor. Or I should say they were 37 points better than the Nets when Derek Williams was on the floor. 24 minutes, 10 points, 4 for 8 field goal attempts, 2 for 5 from the three-point line. Those two threes came in the very start of the second half, I believe, pretty much back-to-back. Right. 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 blocks. 0 turnovers. And no fouls. Yeah. He didn't foul out like a certain somebody did who we'll get to later.
Right. I mean, he was the good version of Derek Williams. Mm-hmm. I think we mentioned it lately that, we had talked to Jared Dubin over on Locked.Knicks about his impact, and there was going to be good nights, bad nights. Clearly, this was one of the good nights, and not just a good night. I think it was actually a pretty great night. Maybe it wasn't like bouncing off the stat line as far as overall production is concerned, but when he was in there, he was effective, like I mentioned before, running alongside Dragic, contributing that way, able to break down guys off the dribble. A lot smoother of a ball handler than I had thought, to be honest with you. There were moments there where he was able to cut to the lane and a willing passer as well, although he only had the one assist. But he was part of the offense. He wasn't a negative aspect at all, and really was able to contribute positively to that. And, active around the boards as well. And, to finish off with 10 points, that's pretty much all you can expect. Look, I think the position is going to be played by committee. We heard, I think, Eric Reed talk about Eric Spoelstra talking, before the game about liking what all the different power forwards bring to the game. There's going to be Luke Babbitt's shooting. There's going to be Derek Williams' athleticism and James Johnson's contributions, whatever they may be on defense. And so we're looking at a position that's going to be played by committee throughout the rest of the season. But for one night, I think Derek Williams pretty much stood above the rest of his competition.
Yeah, you mentioned his ball handling. You're right. He only had one assist. So off the box score, it doesn't really look like he did much of it. But he really did. I thought he gave guys like Goran Dragic and Tyler Johnson an outlet at a lot. Even Justice Winslow, an outlet a lot of times. Just like, hey, take the ball, dribble 2, 3, 4 times, and keep it moving. I think he really did a really good job with that. He did a good job in transition, being available. Sure. Even if he didn't get the ball, he was available. And that's what we're going to see so much of this season. Miami, it looks like they're going to have a good defense, especially when Josh Richardson gets back. And they're going to need to find easy points, and transition is the best way to do that. So the more people that you have available in transition, the easier it's going to be. And I was also very impressed with Derek Williams' athleticism. I thought he just got up and down the court really well, more so than maybe Luke Babbitt, who can seem a little like it's a, like Luke Babbitt when he spots up and shoots, like you pass him the ball and he's a catch and shoot guy, unbelievably fluid and smooth. But you ask him to put the ball down once and he seems all jittery. And Derek Williams doesn't have that, right? He's not the shooter Babbitt is. Like exactly what you're talking about when Spo says, "We want you to do what you do well." Babbitt shoots the ball well. Derek Williams can just kind of move with the ball well, and that's kind of his most impressive thing. He just looks good moving with the ball.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was a nice drive to the hoop from Babbitt. So he did have one drive. So he wasn't just camping out along the line, along the perimeter there. But you know what? The Heat broadcasting crew mentioned that, Babbitt has the ultimate green light from Spoelstra to shoot whenever he gets the ball. So you know what? We're going to expect to see a lot of shooting from him. And that's probably what he does best. So it behooves him and it benefits the team as well.
Yeah. 8 points, 2 for 5 from 3-point range, 5 rebounds, got a steal. So he was a minus 11. So by box score, he was, 48? Derek Williams is 48 points better, plus minus wise, than Luke Babbitt. But, he had a couple threes there in the second half. Played well enough. He blew a defensive assignment, but late in the second half. But that's going to happen with him. That's what we expect. We know that he's not going to be. I don't think he's as bad as a defender as people say he is when he's bracketed with the starting lineup. But I do think that the defense, he was a little slow closing out tonight when he was even playing those reserve guys.
Part of the overall, theme of the game, aside from Dragic's tempo, the team was really strong to start off the game, and then the reserves came in and they lost, I think, what was an 11-point lead in the first quarter, and they kind of fell apart there. And you saw some glaring problems there. I think, Deion Waiters didn't necessarily adjust well defensively. Babbitt was a problem. Even Tyler Johnson. There was a number of guys that just seemed to not play very well together in that, you know, in the second quarter there, and that lead fell apart pretty quickly. And then once the starters were reinserted in the third quarter, we started to see that a lot more mobility. You know, Derek Williams got off a couple of those three-pointers. And then he really saw that. I think that's when Dragic was really scoring most. I think Whiteside really set the tempo in the first, as far as scoring is concerned. But then, you know, Dragic was more effective in the second half against the starting unit. So it's always encouraging. But yeah, it's, you know, we're gonna need positive contributions as much as possible from all these power forwards. You know, and I think that's, we're going to see on a night-to-night basis that it's probably likely to change. You're going to see some nights where Derek Williams is probably not hitting that shot, maybe not necessarily contributing. And then maybe Luke Babbitt will be hitting, you know, 5 of 6 from three-point range, and he'll be the power forward belt winner.
Yeah, I mean, I think when Luke Babbitt was the starter in the first week, we didn't have the power forward belt then. It wasn't invented yet, but he probably would have gotten it. You know,
it was in the shop. This still being designed.
James Johnson played mostly center. I think that was because Willie Reed kind of struggled there, and the Heat moved James Johnson in there. So James Johnson played a little bit of five, not so much any power forward. And Josh McRoberts was out with an injury, Dunkin' Donuts injury. So the power forward belt goes to Derek Williams for now. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I'm hoping that this gets a little bit tougher to decide. That's the best case scenario. All right, let's move on to our spotlight players. We need to find a name for the power forward belt, by the way, or a sponsor. Sponsors, huh?
All right. Yeah, I don't see why not.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know,
it's a big award. I mean, it's
we could use, like, you know, just, I don't know who would want to sponsor the belt. I mean, Levi's. They have belts? The Levi's power forward? I don't know. We're here for you, Levi's. I know you need the business. All right, let's move on to our spotlight players. First one is going to be, obviously, Hassan Whiteside. Let's just break down the box score really quick. 21 points on 9 of 13, 14 rebounds, 5 offensive, 9 defensive. So that 5 offensive is really big because he wasn't getting a lot of offensive rebounds this preseason. 1 assist, 1 steal, 4 blocks and a turnover. That 1 assist is kind of like, oh wow, an assist. That's like huge. It came on like a dribble handoff to, I don't even know if he dribbled. It might have just been a handoff to Tyler Johnson, who drove to the rim. So it wasn't like a display of passing.
But I did see him being a more willing passer. I think so. When, you know, particularly in the first and third quarter when he was really making an impact, he seemed willing to share the ball a little bit. I don't think he was necessarily as much of a black hole as we'd seen during the last season and a half that he played here in Miami. So I think that's definitely a positive step in his development.
I don't know. He took a couple of shots there in the first half. He took that 120-footer. The ball was moving really well. I think Dragic drove to the rim, swung it out to, I think, Wayne Ellington, who swung it to Babbitt, I want to say, who gave it to Whiteside, who was like not even looking at the rim 20 feet away and just turned around.
Wasn't it like a weird handoff there? I think it was Ellington who got the ball on the elbow there, and then he kind of just like handed it over to Whiteside, who was, again, 20 feet away from the rim. I think he was trying to set the screen, and then Ellington kind of bobbled the ball, handed it to him, and Whiteside turned around and saw Justin Hamilton staring at him. He said, oh, I can hit this.
I think that was another play. I think that was like a more – it might have been like the 18-footer. Because I have a couple written down here. I don't know. But he took a couple shots there. It was just like, I don't know if you should be taking those jumpers, dude. Especially like this early in the game. I don't know. But you're saying you thought he was more of a ball mover.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, especially, yeah, there were times there when he was in the low post, I think, where he was, you know, looking at cutters. I think that's the whole thing, is he needs to see people cutting and getting open. And I think if he's getting a double team, you know, again, it wasn't much of a double team. There were moments there where he had Justin Hamilton on him and maybe Trevor Booker, you know, and it, you know, he thought he would still be able to sky over them, and he did. You know, and one time, I think when Lin even collapsed on him and helped out defensively, he just put up a rather awkward off-balance hook shot that fell in. So, I mean, we've seen these kinds of shots from Whiteside in the past. He thinks he's, you know, capable of scoring every time he touches the ball, and more often than not, he is. He was pretty strong tonight overall, though.
He set that strong precedent early again. Yeah. I mean, we've seen this from Whiteside this whole preseason. There was no Brook Lopez in the game, so we should mention that. Sure. But even, you know, in the Wizards game, he's going against Marcin Gortat, who's no, he's not a schlump, you know, he's a legit NBA center. And then he was going against Karl Anthony Towns against the Timberwolves. And in this game, you know, got out 6 for 6, hit his six first shots, 12 points, 2 blocks before he even came out. So again, just setting that tone early. And you mentioned that run that the Nets went on. I mean, they went on that run when Whiteside was off the floor. And they were bringing into within. They went on a 10-0 run at the end of the first half, able to get to the halftime score to within 1 point, even though the Heat had this 11-point lead. That was without Whiteside on the floor. And my first half, I tweeted this. My first half takeaway was Whiteside's going to be really important to the Heat this year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was just so impactful offensively, defensively. I mean, you saw guys like Dragic look to him every time he was coming off of that pick and roll situation. You know, I think Winslow did the same thing. And, you know, once Josh Richardson returns, you know, I think he tried, I'm not sure if Tyler Johnson was able to run it with him. I don't know if there was any kind of connection there from those two, but I mean, they're going to be looking at him, and he's just, it seems like nobody can stop him. Now, maybe I'm wrong there. I mean, again, maybe this is just the Brooklyn effect. But it seems like he's virtually unstoppable there. Maybe
he did look like a foot taller than everybody else on Brooklyn.
it was pretty scary, right? I mean, even Willie Reed looked taller than everybody once he was playing. But Hassan Whiteside was just bullying everybody. It reminds me of when I was, you know, 13 and I had a growth spurt and all of a sudden I was taller than everybody. I couldn't play for a damn, but I was just able to grab every rebound there and just kind of Frankenstein.
For the record, David just compared himself to peak Hassan Whiteside. So we'll just make sure that people remember that.
Well, I mean, I didn't get the $98 million contract because I chose to be podcasting with you.
Well done. Well done.
Bad choice? Maybe? I don't know.
I don't know, man. You said you were a good rebounder.
So you had some post-game comments and from Whiteside?
Yeah, I thought it was – I liked these. Usually his post-game comments were just him flexing for the camera. But this time he said, I want to lead by example. My teammates really trusted me, and I want to fill expectations. We don't care if it's preseason. We're going to build habits. And I was like, that's the right message. I don't know if that was spoon-fed to him by Spoelstra, but that was the right message, right? And he seemed really appreciative of just having that opportunity in the preseason. He also mentioned that he's happy with the way the offense flowed. It's a good mix of people, he said. A lot of attackers, a lot of shooters. We can hurt you in a lot of different ways. And then, you know, that was it. Mentioned that he wants to lead by example.
Yeah, leadership role from Hassan. That's something I don't think a lot of people outside of Miami expect. I mean, you know, you would assume that it comes with the responsibility of having a contract as big as his, but I don't know that a lot of people really foresaw him being able to fulfill that role, but at least he's talking about it, and clearly he's being a leader on the floor. Off of it,
right, exactly. I mean, maybe by that's example, arguable. I mean, he's like, you know, six of his first six shots he made. That's leading by example. You know, he's intense early. I mean, this is the kind of thing that we wanted to see from Whiteside. If the Heat are going to set the tone, I think that's what they did tonight. Again, it's the Brooklyn Nets. We understand that. But Whiteside came out and set that tone early. Goran Dragic came out and set his tone as well. To have those two things in lockstep were really, really important, and not conflict with each other. Whiteside, I mean, I was a little hard on him, but he didn't step on the ball movement, you know? And Dragic was really good about it, and the whole team was really good about feeding Whiteside. I know you have a spotlight player though.
I do. I mean, one more thing about Whiteside. I think you know, as far as the pace is concerned, he was trailing a lot on that transition offense, and so if Dragic or whatever ball handler had a double team on him, all of a sudden he would just cut, you know, openly to the hoop, and that was what freed up a lot of his shots there. That was really a benefit of having that kind of, you know, quick tempo, et cetera. But, you know, for all the damage that Whiteside did inside, I think Wayne Ellington showed a lot from the perimeter. You know, 29 minutes of play. He started tonight, and he got 14 points overall, 5 of 10 on all field goal attempts, 4 of 8 from three-point range. He finished with 3 rebounds and 1 assist. So, again, not a huge night. But, you know, in 29 minutes of play as a starter, he was, I think, a pretty positive impact there. Look, I mean, he's a very willing shooter, let's say. I mean, as soon as he caught the ball, I think he was looking to shoot it. Mm-hmm. But with his kind of ability, maybe that's not such a bad thing. But I was also impressed with his hustle defensively. Like, I think he was really getting after it. I think he was attacking a lot of players. I'm not sure how he did in an overall foul situation there. Oh, he only picked up one foul, which I'm surprised at, because he seemed very aggressive, if not necessarily effective with his defense. And that's, you know, that's good energy from him. But again, you know, if Dragic is going to be kicking it, you know, inside and looking for somebody along the perimeter there to knock down a shot, Ellington fits a role there. So I think overall, we expect Richardson to be the bigger impact player because of what he can bring defensively. But, you know, we're not quite sure how Ellington's going to fit in. But I think tonight he had a real positive impact on the game.
Yeah, we saw him starting there, and I know some people are wondering why. And we had talked about it probably about a month ago that, you know, if Richardson is injured, then I wouldn't be surprised if Wayne Ellington got the start just to maintain some you know, the integrity of the rotation.
Right.
And I think that's exactly what happened tonight. Wayne Ellington is not nearly the defender that Richardson is, but he's certainly comparable as a three-point shooter and as a ball mover. I think we saw him move the ball fairly well. And, you know, I liked the way he was able to help space the floor in that starting unit. It worked for me. And what stood out really was imagining Josh Richardson in that role, and I really liked it. So I think Wayne Ellington's got a spot in this rotation. I don't think it's just going to be filling in for Richardson if Richardson is ever again injured. You know, we didn't see Beno Udrih tonight. We saw Briante Weber in garbage time. I think Wayne Ellington's going to be among the guards in the rotation.
It's tough to see how his minutes are going to play out because, I mean, clearly on a night like tonight, again, caveat, preseason Nets, whatever. But you can see that he's able to contribute. He does bring something to the table. If it's just his perimeter shooting, you know, if it's earnest defense, fine. But, you know, he does contribute in that sense. So, you know, obviously Richardson is the clear favorite, I think. And, you know, Deion Waiters has to get touches. I think Beno Udrih is looking to still make an impact. You know, we don't expect you and I, we don't expect Briante Weber to continue with the team. I think, you know, he needs a lot of work and he'll probably not start the season with the Heat. But at the same time, look, there's already a glut in the backcourt. It's just going to be difficult for Spoelstra to manage those minutes. And maybe it's just, you know, bringing in Ellington in really specific situations where you need shooters. Maybe there's a particular lineup where he can really exploit a defense or something along those lines. And that's where he'll play the most minutes. But it's tough to see how he can make an impact. But on
really?
A night like today.
I think there's going to be minutes for him.
I just don't see it, man. I mean, there's so many guards at this point.
Goran Dragic, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, and Deion Waiters are like the core four.
I mean, everything's all screwed up now with preseason. You know, you took out the whole starting unit at one point there and brought in all the reserves. But, I mean, that's not going to be the case once the regular season starts.
Well, they're going to play three guard lineups. We know they are. I think that's going to open up some room for Ellington. I don't think he's going to play 29 minutes a game. But I certainly think he can very well average 12 to 14 minutes a game. I don't think that's unreasonable at all.
I mean, I don't see it, to be honest with you, because I still think that they're going to use either Tyler or Waiters in that capacity. I'm just not sure that they're going to. I mean, look.
That's what I'm saying. You can use that. They're going to have three guard units. It's not like just those two and you're just wondering, you know, which and or of these guys are going to use. It's, you know, you can use three of them at a time.
Well, I mean, yeah, but you're going to have Dragic in there. Presumably you're going to have Josh Richardson. Mm-hmm. Who's the third guard? Is it going to be by committee then again? You know, it's like, oh, on our three-guard lineup, first it's Tyler, then it's Deion, then it's Ellington. I mean,
yeah.
I'm just not sure how it's going to work. So it's every third game you think Ellington gets minutes there, maybe?
I think that you're going to see just him have minutes when these other guys are resting. I think it's just you're going to see Ellington get a couple of reserve minutes in the end of the second quarter and the beginning of the fourth quarter or something like that. I don't know. It just might be something like that, yeah.
It's possible. Now, I'll also say this. If there was one downside to the way Dragic plays, I just don't see him being able to play 82 games this season. That guy seems like he's going to get hurt at any minute now.
Which would open the door for more minutes for everybody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but we didn't. So just some other notes that we want to go through. Willie Reed, you weren't impressed with him.
No, he struggled. Couldn't set screens well. His defense was pretty poor.
His positioning on the screens. I'm glad you brought that up. Just always seemed confused. Maybe that's just growing pains with a new team, new personnel. I'm hoping that's what it is because we thought he'd be good at setting screens.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe despite his physicality and his athleticism, I don't think he likes mixing it up too much. Maybe despite his size, he's more of a finesse kind of guy. I don't know, because he wasn't a willing screener. He shed that screen so quickly, and it was just really weird to see on a couple of occasions there, and he left his man out to dry, and you know, they were trying to get that pick and roll going, and just fell apart because of his poor screen setting. But defensively, you know, there was some mismatch there that I don't think the Nets exploited nearly as much with Bojan Bogdanović. And you know, he's 6'8", and I think he was playing the three, but he was in there and knocking down a number of shots. And then there was a rotation there where Willie was just completely lost. He left him wide open on a couple of occasions, and that was particularly gruesome. He's going to get most of his minutes, I think, in the paint. Maybe cleaning up the glass every once in a while. We saw a couple of shots. I think you tweeted something about Birdman 2.0. Am I right?
Yep.
Well, that might be the extent of his overall impact there, which, you know, I think you and I expected more of him, and maybe he will contribute and maybe he will be able to grow into that. But for now, there were some rough spots there that he clearly needs to work on.
Yeah, I agree completely. Another note, Tyler Johnson, Deion Waiters, we got our first look of both of them off the bench before tonight. Winnington had yet to play, so Tyler Johnson was starting at the two guard. So this was our first time getting to see that, and that's going to be the reserve guard unit, right? It's presumably going to be Dragic and Richardson as the starters, and these two guys are going to be the first two guards off the bench, and they're going to get minutes together right away. I wasn't impressed. I thought that they didn't really know who should handle the ball. You know, Waiters obviously wants to handle the ball. Tyler Johnson, obviously, with his new $50 million contract, you could tell that I think he wants to prove that he's worth it, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that he wasn't getting the ball. And there was I just thought there was questions like, okay, does he get it? Do I get it? What plays are we running here? I thought there was just a little bit of some questions about who really needs to do what, especially because Waiters had been the lead guy in that bench unit. Because Tyler Johnson was previously starting in these last two preseason games. So now Tyler Johnson's there, and it's like, okay, no, like between the two of us, we need to figure out what's going on here. So I think that'll get fixed with time. I think it was very obvious, was it not?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you that Tyler seems, if not necessarily like he was forcing it, like there were moments there where, and you don't want to get into that, reading body language and things of that sort. But maybe he was trying to push it a little bit too much and trying to say, look, I am a capable player. Like, he had some really great hustle moments, particularly defensively, where he was intercepting passing lanes and things of that sort. But especially on offense, he was really pushing it a little bit. He looked uncomfortable. For Waiters, we had seen some really efficient games from him. Not so much tonight. Limited the turnovers after a 7-turnover night in the second preseason game, just 2 against the Nets.
Those came early. He really cleaned it up towards as the game went on.
And he did finish with 12 points, but most of that was in garbage time when in the Heat, I think, already had a 20-point lead. He knocked down a couple of 3-pointers, so he is showing so that he's capable of knocking down from long range there. And Jason Jackson, excuse me, had a pretty nice spotlight on him during halftime. I'm not sure if you got a chance to see that. Yeah, so that was –
He's an Eagles fan.
He is an Eagles fan.
He's a big fan of Carson Wentz.
Yeah, I don't think he knew who the quarterback's name was, though. I think he liked the quarterback.
And he's just like, that's right. He's like, and I like that new quarterback. He's got a bright future ahead of him or something like that. And then it was nice that he didn't know that Derek Williams was also an Eagles fan, so I liked that laugh over that.
Yeah, and he also said that he wore number 3 because of Allen Iverson. I had always assumed it was Wade for some reason. But I guess it was an Iverson thing, and that makes more sense considering he's a Philly guy.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure the fact that Wade wore 3 doesn't hurt either.
Yeah.
All right, Justice Winslow fouled out. Not the best night for him. I thought just from the get-go, he just seemed cautious. Is that the word that I want to use? Just didn't seem aggressive. He had a couple of nice plays. Early on, he had this. He had a high pick and roll that he ran with Whiteside. Right. Got him the ball, had this nice skip pass to Goran Dragic, like something that you would have seen LeBron do, like from one, basically 3/4 of the court away, skip pass to a Dragic catch and shoot 3. There were some nice moments there, but overall, you know, he can't be fouling out. That's what we love about Winslow, that he's able to play defense, great defense, lockdown defense without fouling, and he fouled.
Well, I mean, it was weird because I think a lot of those calls could have gone either way, and clearly he's not the kind of superstar who's going to get the benefit of the call.
Refs are calling a lot of touchy fouls. That's
And I did see that, you know, with him in particular. I think a lot of that is the Jeremy Lin factor. You know, we talked about that during the playoffs last season. He has a real – I mean, look, if you're going to say anything about Lin, he does have a hell of an ability to throw his head back and look like he's, you know, selling contact there. I worked on a number of occasions, not just against Winslow, but other defenders there. You know, and yes, I think Winslow's shot was a little off there. He had a 15-footer that was wide open that he missed, and he bricked it pretty badly. But he did have 7 rebounds. He did have 4 assists. You know, he also had 3 turnovers. But we're starting to see more of the overall impact. I think he was just called on last season to be that perimeter defender who wasn't going to handle the ball because you had guys like, you know, Joe Johnson and Dwayne Wade and everybody else. And so now we're starting to see the evolution of his. And, you know, to be honest with you, getting that first glimpse of seeing what Winslow can do, you know, can be, I was actually pretty impressed. I mean, I know there were still some rough spots there, but I like seeing this next phase of his, of his evolution. And I think it's something that's going to continue to develop. I'm still pretty high on what he can be as far as an overall playmaker and facilitator and continue to be a strong perimeter defender. So I'm still encouraged by what I saw, even if there were some rough spots tonight.
Yeah. Six. I mean, in the end it's 6 fouls. Not, he fouled out in the third preseason game. Who cares? I would have just liked him to see, and it's not his fault. You know, I would have just liked to see him get more shots. He only took 6 shots, only 1 3-pointer. One of the things I had written down that I wanted to watch was his form on the 3-point shot. Cause, and I got 1 chance and that was it. You know, didn't really get a big sample size. All right, wrapping up. Jason Jackson had a nice moment talking about Jose Fernandez and all that. That was a cool thing for the Heat. They wore those the number 16 shooting shirts before in warmups. Overall, the broadcast was a little iffy. You could tell it's still preseason for them. But Tony Fiorentino, he's in prime time, man. I was really impressed with him. Yeah, I think he's in his comfort zone. I think that the storylines are gone. He doesn't want to, I don't even think he said Dwayne Wade's name. He didn't talk about Chris Bosh. The storylines are gone. He's just talking about developing players, and you could tell like the coach in him really started to come out. Like, we don't see that side of him too often in an impressive way. And right. I was really impressed with him. Like, he talked about Goran Dragic's drop step, talked about how Deion Waiters could come over this pick and roll a little bit better. You know, he had some moments, and I was like, all right, Tony, you're in regular season form.
Yeah, I think the coach certainly has his share of detractors there. And
sure.
I mean,
that's why I thought it was worth mentioning, though. He gets too much hate sometimes, man. He's doing a good job.
You know, look, we when we talked to Eric Reed earlier in the season, you know, he was gushing about Tony and the brotherhood, the friendship that they share that goes beyond the court and you know, the play-by-play team that's been there, a tandem that's been there for, what, was it 10 years now, I think? It's been a long time, yeah. This tandem, and it's been a good duo there. And look, I mean, Tony knows his stuff as far as the X's and O's are concerned. He can identify players and what they do well, what's going on with them, and I think that's a strong suit of his. And look, if it resonated with you, more power to you.
Thanks, man.
So, yeah.
Feel good about it. I wanted to give him a shout-out. He doesn't get enough love. It's a hard job. All right.
Well, he didn't reference Mount Vernon once, so that was a good thing, too.
All right, well, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter, @LockedOnHeat, or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions or comments, ask about advertising opportunities, especially if you want to sponsor the Power Forward belt.
Levi's.
It's a big one that's available, guys. It's a big billboard. You can send those to LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. A big thanks to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show today, and a big thanks to David for joining me.
Absolutely, Wes.
All right, this was fun. Catch you next time.